Omaha Public Radio presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. Today's speaker will be Winnie Callahan, Executive Director of the Peter Kiewit Institute and the College of Information Science and Technology on the University of Nebraska at Omaha campus, as well as Assistant Vice President of the University of Nebraska Foundation. She'll talk about the UNO supercomputer. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, May 15, 2008, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Hugh Cowden, a member of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee.
Good afternoon. My name is Hugh Cowden. I'm a member of the Omaha Press Club Education Committee. At least once a month, the Press Club sponsors an education forum that we think will be of interest to our members and to the community at large. You do not have to be a Press Club member to attend. The forums are open to everyone. Today, we are dealing with the supercomputer at the University of Nebraska at Omaha and related developments at the Peter Kiewit Institute and UNO's College of Information Science and Technology. More than 10 years ago, UNO and the leaders in the city of Omaha decided it was time for this area to get into the high-tech business in a serious way, not only for the opportunities it would offer students, but also for the benefits it would offer companies in the local area and beyond by providing large numbers of graduates with advanced knowledge of the new technology. The result was the founding and development of the Peter Kiewit Research Institute and the College of Information Science and Technology at UNO. Our speaker today is Dr. Winnie Callahan, who has been Executive Director of the Institute and Assistant Vice President of the University of Nebraska Foundation since the Institute's inception in 1997. She will discuss UNO's supercomputer and related high-tech developments which have contributed to the university's heightened visibility in this region and beyond over the last decade. Many of you here will remember Winnie Callahan for her work as a teacher and administrator with the Omaha Public Schools, as well as her service on a wide array of community boards and her numerous honors and awards while overseeing the Peter Kiewit Institute over the last decade. Winnie has been instrumental in helping to develop partnerships with more than 800 businesses. In addition, she works closely with the Scott Technology Center and local leaders to promote economic development and entrepreneurship. Winnie holds an undergraduate degree from Winthrop College and a master's and doctorate degrees in educational administration from the University of Nebraska, and she has been an adjunct instructor in UNO's College of Education. Would you please help me welcome to the podium Dr. Winnie Callahan? There will be time for questions after Dr. Callahan has finished speaking, so I would ask you to be writing those questions while you're eating, and someone will be around to collect them. There should be paper on your table. Dr. Callahan. All yours.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, good afternoon. I am really excited to be here with you today and to tell you a story of success right here in River City. I will say that there is in this audience this noon some old friends, some new friends, and some that fit right in the middle. Now, for my old friends that have threatened to heckle me today, we'll have none of that. You know, you can take the principal out of the school, but not the principal out of the person. So dismissing you from the room for bad behavior, I can still handle. Today, just to kind of get us started, I'd like to introduce Bob Horomic. He is one of the people that makes sure everything works for us when we go out and around and when we have visitors in the building. But from groundbreaking to earth-shattering, to to taking us to global proportions. Things have happened within the Peter Kiewit Institute in a very short period of time. The governance of the Institute is clearly the secret behind the success of the Institute, in my opinion. Because with a board of policy advisors made up of 11 CEOs working directly with the university system, there's been a concerted effort and a cooperative focus on making sure that the Institute moves at the speed of business and that the education that students are getting today moves toward where business is headed, not where it's been. And technology, regardless of the business you're in or the business you're not in, but the tools you now use at home, technology influences the way in which you work. So it's an exciting time. In terms of partnerships, I'm excited to tell you that the number is literally exploding. We currently have 1,013 partnerships, and they're literally global. They're from all over the world. They involve small businesses. They involve middle-sized companies, and they're corporate giants. And they're not just partnerships on a piece of paper. They're involved. They provide support to us to help work with students, to provide state-of-the-art internships, to team teach classes. Just think of it. We have the best and brightest from an array of companies that we could never hire and bring in because we couldn't compete with corporate opportunities and stock options, etc. But for students to be able to utilize those talented people in partnership with professors that are stellar gives our students the very best of all sides of the world. We also have signed memorandums of understanding with a number that literally solidifies the way in which we're going to work and lead in many cases to contractual opportunities. For example, when you're new and you're young and you're starting out, big corporate entities and sometimes even small local ones look at you and say, well, I don't know, you know, these are students and we're not real sure that they can deliver for us. So being able to do simple contracts in testing, development, and deployment provides kind of the bait on the end of the hook to be able to rein in some of the larger companies or larger opportunities from the companies because they will, in effect, take a test run with us. And it's worked very, very well. By putting the three entities together, the University of Nebraska at Omaha and what was 10 years ago a new College of Information Science and Technology, in partnership with the University of Nebraska Lincoln's College of Engineering, which in Omaha has frankly had a presence going back to Omaha University, but now expanded, then work with business, industry, and government. You can do things across the lines and among the groups that make it so much more than any one of those entities could do individually. And I'll give you an anecdote. We have students that come in. They'll come in maybe as a computer science major. Well, computer science, you study things like programming, code writing, network infrastructure, etc. But what if you could also take classes and even get another major or a minor in computer engineering where you would understand the way in which hardware is configured? You can then capitalize on both the hardware and software side and think of your value to a corporation. We have a lot of young people do that. Now, you think that's complicated. Let me take you one step further. In the fields that I just mentioned, and there are examples, if you go into those high technical fields and you go into them at a high level, which we provide, for 3 hours or 6 hours more, you can also walk out the door with a major or a minor in mathematics or in physics. So we have some very bright young people that can go out the door and provide tremendous expertise across a variety of areas in corporations. Thus the reason getting partners from around the world is pretty easy. And now we have over 800, closer to 900 graduate students as a part of this. The young people come for undergraduate and graduate programs from 46 states and 10 foreign countries. Who would have thunk it? It's kind of fun. They're here, they're doing well. The other thing I would call your attention to right away is the quality of the students. One of the things that people here in Omaha have known for a lot of years is the quality of the programs at the University of Nebraska at Omaha have been very strong in a lot of areas. However, because of tremendous support and scholarship opportunities to build a new institute and to draw the very best and brightest young people in, we now are able to attract students that heretofore simply would not have stayed in Nebraska to go to school. Frankly, we are drawing students that are turning down the likes of Carnegie Mellon, MIT, Stanford, Cal Poly, the Illinois Institute of Technology, and I can go on. It's absolutely stunning what has happened to the quality of the students. I think that's significant for a lot of reasons, but one is if you have an incredible amount of talented young people, professors want to work with them. So do businesses. And I want to be very upfront with you. You can pretend all you want to why businesses want to work with you. When push comes to shove, they want the inside track to a stellar talent pool, and we do offer them that. And that's really exciting. So that's the way in which this has gone together and works. ACT scores, for your information, in case you've forgotten how they work or choose not to remember like some of us do, the top ACT score is a 36. That compares to the 1600 on the SAT. Our average of the scholars we recruit in on an annual basis ranges between 32 and 34. The exception that I listed, and I just picked a few years, is obviously the year we started. But look at what that average was. We set the bottom at 30. We wanted top 10% in their high school graduation classes, a 3.5 GPA, and a proven track record of participation in a variety of civic and school activities. In other words, we want them to walk, talk, and chew bubble gum at the same time. And we've been very successful. We average now about 400 of these stellar students per year coming in the door, recruited in, and the list of schools that they have opportunities to be fully scholarshiped into is humbling. It's exciting. But let's go a step further. The number 2,400 means we have other students attending that maybe were not, quote, the top superstars. Of all the students at the Institute, the average is 27.8. One small anecdote, Mr. Scott, Walter Scott, and I were meeting back the second or third year, and he starts laughing, and it's just the two of us in the room, and I said, Mr. Scott, what's so funny? He said, well, I was just thinking that at least one of us in the room probably wouldn't have gotten one of these scholarships. To which I quickly said, well, I assume you're talking about yourself. And if you know Walter, he chuckled and he said, well, I absolutely am. And I said, well, Walter, there are two of us in the room that would not have gotten one of these scholarships. And Walter, could we have added our scores together? And he says, that's enough. Let's move on. So we're very proud of the young people that are coming in and that we're graduating. If you've ridden over near the former Exarban Raceway lately, it's hard to recognize. They have been, and I hasten to say, in total, with the exception of the Institute itself, built by the Suzanne and Walter Scott Foundation. And then they will revert back to the university. But what that has enabled through their generosity is we've been able to keep pace and add the facilities as they were needed so we can pursue aggressively economic development and be able to keep pace. Now let's talk about these little geniuses that come in the door for just a second. What brings them here? Well, the facility is state-of-the-art in every sense. The technology is up to date. It changes every 18 to 24 months. The business partners are phenomenal, and they're there. They're working with us. What about where the young people live? The residence hall is state-of-the-art, private bedrooms, broadband capability. And I want you to hear this because I'm sure it was your experience when you went to college. They have maid service once a week. And then the food is another whole story. So they're treated very, very well. The top building was the first building. We started with seven startup companies on the third floor of the Institute in 2000. We very quickly had good news and bad news. The good news was the seven companies were doing well. The bad news was the seven companies were doing well. More room was needed. Thus, Scott Technology started. It's the top building. It's 60,000 square feet. The top floor, 5,500, has room for incubator startups, professors, students, and others that are in the business associated with technology, telecommunications, and engineering. The second building, 83,000 square feet. We learned from traveling around the country that we probably wanted to have different size tenants, and we wanted a memorandum of understanding because a lot of technology parks, and I could name several, they have companies, the right names are there, but they do not work with the university programs or the students. They simply enjoy the property. That's not true here. There's an MOU first, and we agree on how we're going to work together, and then they're invited into the center. That provides winning opportunities for all. The third building has two wings, and there's been a third one added that opens within the next 30 days or so. That's the Global Innovations and Strategy Center. It is the first of its kind in the entire world. It is a think tank of sorts. It is an extremely secure building for tornadoes and other things. So the technology is secure and there's not a reason to fear interruption to the internet connectivity and all that they need to use. There is a group sitting here today from the Global Innovations and Strategy Center. So if you guys would raise your hand because there may be some questions for you. They're partners. We work with them all the time. It's a partnership between Strategic Command and the Peter Kiewit Institute. But what they do that is phenomenal, they take in hard-to-wrestle-with problems that the world needs to address, from a pandemic flu epidemic and an early detection to what do you do with space debris and a plethora of other issues. And under General Cartwright, when he was here, now the Vice Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, this was one of the things he put in place. He wanted to bring a group of business people in that were stellar in the areas from finance to transportation to communication, and you can make up the rest. You know who they would be. That would be catastrophic to the economy if there was an issue. Pair those business people with researchers from universities, national labs, etc. Bright new minds, students that don't have blinders on and aren't afflicted with the it won't work syndrome. And then a few military and some of the contractors that work with the military to put all of those resources around problems when they come forward and come up with new solutions other than what you would perceive to be a military solution of force, but to figure ways to protect, defend, and prevent. It's working. The very first project that was taken on was with the Peter Kiewit Institute. It was an early detection tool to predict or to recognize pandemic flu or bird flu should it hit. I remember the morning well. There was a group of us in the room, and it was explained to us that this was a project, the first one. It had to be successful. And you have 120 days to create this computer tool to predict if there's a pandemic flu breakout. That's well before, their goal was well before lab tests and all, because then it would be too late. I was in the room with a group of bright minds, a little younger than mine. And I said, 120 days? And I looked at the students, and you know what their answer was? No problem. I had a heart attack, and they were ready to go. 87 days later, the final product was delivered to General Cartwright. He was thrilled, and it went to the CDC, and that project now has acquired funding and is being expanded and is supporting Nebraska, and we're going back to the CDC soon with the upgrades. Again, you didn't have the issue of it couldn't be done. Now, that's great, and other projects are there, and there are people sitting at this table that have been working with these students, and they are presenting all over the country, and maybe we'll have time if they would like to share. John, I think this was the cyber debris, the mitigation of space debris, and then the other issue was that particular one. Help me out. Tunnel detection using satellites to find tunnels underground and how to use that technology to go forward. The students were amazing. They did a fabulous job. The people they met, the people they interviewed, the briefings they received, unbelievable. And those projects were advanced through Homeland Security and other areas to take forward. So it's not an exercise. It's real. Okay? SAIC, Science Applications International Corporation, worked with us to build a visualization and simulation center, and with Nebraska Furniture Mart, another partner. This room is right inside our front door and to the right. It provides a way to visualize data, simulation activities. It's a teaching area. It's a learning area. It's used by business and industry as well as our students. Key to this could have been placed anywhere. SAIC could have built it anywhere. They have over 44,000 employees, I think, globally. They chose to put it at the Institute because they knew when they're not using it, and they use it maybe once every month or once every 2 months, that technology would just be sitting, where if it was with us, it would be utilized. Great opportunity. Firefly. This is the supercomputer. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. We needed a new data center. About a year and a half, 2 years ago, it was decided, almost three now. And again, when you put bright minds together, things take paths you didn't necessarily plan. A data center is kind of ho-hum, but we were out of room, floor space, with electrical and cooling capacity to take on other servers. And we've been doing work, for example, for Air Force and Global Weather on the unclassified side, just data mining types of activities. We've done testing for the Defense Information Systems Agency, and there's a long list. But you can't put the servers in. It's a little hard to do the work. So the idea was we'll build a new data center. Well, a couple of young people came and said, why don't we get kind of a large computer and put it in there so we can increase our ability to teach students how to deal with large data sets? And I says, what does large mean? And I choked on that. And then they indicated to me what the price tag might be, and I basically said, no, go away, we're not even going to advance that. Because you don't want to know the number. I can tell you I didn't either. However, in Omaha, you have three of the nation's largest design engineering firms. And we have 38 in all, but we have three of the nation's largest. Who designs data centers? Who builds high technology facilities? Who has to secure them for hospitals, etc.? We had them here. Next, we just happened to have, I thought this was real convenient, but Jack Wilhelmy from Waldinger Mechanical Engineering just happens to be the president of the Mechanical Contractors Association of America right now. How convenient. Because there is a company out of Rhode Island called APC that builds a different racking system for data centers. It doesn't have to have a huge raised floor. It's very space conscious, and all of the electrical and the cooling, everything runs through this racking system. But it was pricey, very pricey. So after nagging the leadership at APC for several months, did get the top executive into Omaha, and he went around the town and looked in shock at what's in Omaha. He toured the institute, met some of the young people, met some of our partners, and we took him to dinner that night, and around the table were the heads of these leading design engineering, construction companies, mechanical contractors, etc. He was aghast. Are you all this supportive of this institute? Yes. He leaned over to me at the table and he said, this is unbelievable. I said, well, you need to step up. You need to become a partner. Their first deployment of this racking system was at Carnegie Mellon University, you know, a small school on the East Coast. The second was at the Harvard School of Medicine, another small school. But interestingly enough, both smaller deployments than what we have at the Institute. This is the largest they've ever done. And they donated every bit of it, $1.8 million. In addition, Dell Computers stepped up. AMD, the processor people, stepped up. Microsoft stepped up. Platform Computing came to the door. They stepped up. Waldinger Corporation, design engineering companies here in town, from DLR, HDR, Daily, Gallup, Webster Design, Schneider Electric, Merlin Guerin, the UPS company, K Caterpillar, train chillers. The list is staggering. The result was the gifts of $13.8 million of the equipment needed for this center. And then private contributions led by Dick Holland to actually make it all come together. In short, because of Omaha and because of us being good for business, a partnership means each partner gets something. These companies said, we need to do this in Omaha. We average 2 to 7 companies in our front door every week. They came in and said, wow, we could never get an audience like this anywhere else. And I can tell you, their bottom line has begun to be impacted. The center, which I hope you'll tour, is open. It's glass exposed on 4 sides. You can see it. It's phenomenal. Companies come through there, they're in awe. That's how Omaha works. And you know that. Partnerships, private, public, you know that that's how Omaha works. Here's another example. So now what do we have? We have the world's 43rd largest computer, supercomputer in the world, based on the rankings at Supercompute 2007 in October. There's reason to believe that going forward, we might be between 13th and 15th when we're able to trade out and get all of the quad cores in. AMD had a little bit of a problem with their quad core delivery, and it was backed up. But 43rd in the world, when you started at zero, you should have seen the faces when we were in Reno for that conference. And they said, well, what size was your computer before you made the additions? You don't get it. We didn't have one. They couldn't believe it. So that's what's happened here. Let's talk about what it's capable of. First of all, it has over 500 kilowatts of power backed up by 500 kVA UPS unit. It is 1,151 nodes. That means individual computers. They have dual and quad core capabilities in them, duals currently. It's powered by 2 100-ton train chillers that cool the water that come into it. They're backed up by a 450 kVW generator by Caterpillar. And then the computer itself is backed up by 1,000 kW generator. That's a lot of power. It's absolutely stunning to see. And because all of the air goes in these black boxes, the hot air is contained in the middle aisle. They look like houses. It goes through filters. It is chilled right inside those little huts and shot back out directly on the front of the computers. Thus, the ambient temperature in the total room is not an issue. It is a new design. It is gaining tremendous credibility. It doesn't require as much work or as much floor space, and we didn't have to worry about a raised floor because in the place we were putting it, there wasn't enough room for a slope. I'll give you 2 examples of 2 tests that have been run on it. We did a project for an actuarial firm in Seattle that works with local insurance companies. They had already done a project and benchmarked it. It took them 10 hours. It took Firefly on 100 nodes, 3 minutes and 14 seconds to do the same thing. Time is money. The second project we did, which will make you smile, you're all familiar with the Henry Dorley Zoo. The work they're doing in Madagascar on identifying species. Well, 2 examples to that. One is the first test we ran because the software is somewhat limiting. Because, by the way, the Premier software was designed to run on an Apple computer. And when Doc runs it at the zoo, it took 2 months, 3 weeks, and some hours, and it churned. So we did that project on 4 of our computers, just 4 of the 1,151, because we were limited by the software. It took 3 minutes and 16 seconds. Now, we then took a total lemur family tree, the San Diego supercomputer, started it. After 120 hours, it choked. It quit. We did the family tree that has never been done in the world, according to Doc, and I'm not going to cross Doc Simmons. I know he's right. We took more than 1 million lines of code, and in 101 hours, it had run the entire package. Now, what we have is a tremendous opportunity. We have a situation where students can learn parallelization of code, where they can learn applications, how to secure it, how to divide the machine up to keep clients separate. Wonderful resource. Now we need to work to reach the potential that's been provided to us and to move it forward so it gives back an educational value, a scientific and research value, and through memorandums of understanding with our partners, is able to provide real-life opportunities that students can learn from being a part of and understanding how it's set up and how it's divided. So with that, I will say that the first contract in on it was we are hosting the Gallup World Poll. We are the largest Microsoft cluster in the world. And we're looking at a variety of ways to have it do great things. And through all of that, the educational opportunity for students is just stellar. We will have a concentration of courses in the fall. We have now added, by the way, the first degree here of a 2-degree step in information assurance that'll start in the fall. That's amazing because we have an NSA center in information assurance. Now we'll have a bachelor's degree, and we're adding a 5th year, we hope, within the next year. And we have bioinformatics that works with the med center. It's awesome. I hope you'll come see it. I'm so excited you take an interest in it. And I have some handouts. They're single pages with a front and back that'll give you some of the vital statistics. But at this point, Hugh, I'll turn it back to you. And I can tell you, we've got some experts in the room. And I'm not talking about me. So we can put them on the spot, too.
The first question. Thank you, Winnie. How does the Board of Regents fit into the governance of the Institute? And I think if you have questions you want to ask, put them down on the paper at your table and they'll be picked up. Again, how does the Board of Regents fit into the governance of the Institute?
Well, you need to remember that the Institute is the University of Nebraska's. And the Board of Regents is the governing board. They work directly to make sure that the opportunities that are provided to students are delivered as the university system would have them delivered. The Board of Policy Advisors works directly with the president's office, who has the authority to appoint that board and to support together opportunities to leverage resources within the state to make the university all it can be. So the Board of Regents is the governing board, clearly. And we're very excited that they're excited about what's going on here as well.
Please describe future synergies between PKI and the UNO Business School to be built.
That's what you call a natural fit. We have been supplementing our engineering and IT programs for some time with business seminar series and business immersion programs. And what has stood our opportunities separate and apart from most programs has been the fact that there's been application, not only curriculum, but application opportunities through internships and teaming. So the College of Business will only, in proximity, enhance our ability to do even more things together.
In this new age of collaborative research, can you tell us about some efforts at PKI to embrace this collaborative research?
Well, I cited the zoo, and that's collaborative. And it's scientific and it's biological, and the genetic study there only serves to enhance the efforts between the medical center, the institute, the biology department, etc. I think what's also neat is the Firefly, as Dick Holland calls it, this supercomputer will be working with all campuses of the University of Nebraska. We expect UNL to use it in a variety of ways. In fact, that's already begun. We expect and know the Med Center. In fact, they were a contributing partner. They have everything from protein strands to taking MRIs and being able to visualize and simulate changes even on the fly potentially during surgeries to make it more compelling. So the collaborations are huge, and I don't see why other institutions near us like Creighton wouldn't want to work with us as well. I think it's amazing.
Two questions here. How do you charge for the use of Firefly, and is there a menu of services and costs?
We have a group that has been hired to run the supercomputer, and they look at each project and work on numbers of hours, projected use, how many machines, our total project scope, because sometimes you don't know how long something's going to take, and then they price accordingly. I will tell you that the Holland Computing Center is set up as a separate 501c3. It is not there to make money. It is a nonprofit. Any dollars that come in are to go back to sustaining it, to upgrades, and again, any dollars that would be generated then go back for scholarships and to enhance the institute.
This one is mine. Have you had any students come into the program who have had perfect ACT or SAT scores?
We've had three, and we just signed our fourth. And we're really excited about them. And within the next week or two, I hope you'll see a news article that tells you about this last student that's come in. Real quick anecdote. When we signed our first two perfect scores, one was from Madison, Nebraska. The other one was from Omaha Central. Both of them had a first name of Matt, Matthew. Both had a middle initial D. The last name was obviously different. And about 6 months later, a young man and his mother came in and wanted to talk about getting a scholarship. The young man was a little shy, but mother wasn't. And she kept saying, tell her, tell her. And I said, what are you going to tell me? And I said, first of all, tell me your name. Matthew. I said, do you have a middle name? David. His last name was Schreiner, and he was from Pella, Iowa, and he had a perfect ACT. I didn't know whether to go buy a lottery ticket or whether to tell anybody that was going to have a child or a grandchild or a nephew, name that kid Matthew D. Whatever.
I had heard that one before. That's right. I have a question here that I can't, part of what I can't read. Please describe types of current and planned. Can you read that, Winnie? Current and planned.
Collaboration or cooperation.
With?
Chinese
institutions. Okay, good.
Sorry, I wrote it in Chinese.
That was yeah, well, it's been a long time since I took that subject. So.
I know that the University of Nebraska at Omaha and UNL both have partnerships with Chinese institutions as well as with Indian Institute of Technology and a host of others. There's a Confucius Center at UNL. We've had Chinese students that are in graduate and undergraduate programs. I'm not sure of any pending new partnerships with Chinese universities. We are working on a project, I should say were, Chengdu province, where the pandas are. We've had some exchange and some research initiatives going there. But I guess the position of the university is clearly one of if there is an opportunity to broaden horizons and to be able to learn cross-cultural opportunities and activities, then there's certainly openings for a host of countries, and we would pursue those as appropriate in terms of what they're asking and what we could provide.
How is the job situation for students? Has it been getting better, worse, or?
We have 99.9% of our students place their first semester their senior year. Companies are flying in from literally all over this country and the world to recruit students. We need more students. Because the quality of our graduates, whether it's the Durham School's Architectural of Engineering degree, or whether it's our bioinformatics degree, or especially our information assurance degree, companies hire them, and they say, we'll take everyone you graduate for the next 3 years. We have companies, well, I'll use Kiewit as an example. I could use Lockheed Martin. You pick it. They are crying for engineers, all kinds of engineers. We are getting beat by India, China, and a host of other countries in getting young people to go into engineering and IT fields. We need them. We are making a concerted effort to recruit students, and you can help. You know, a lot of times young people don't know the opportunities. Their families don't come from IT and engineering backgrounds. And so they're kind of guided down safe career fields. If a student has an aptitude to math and science and likes computers and all types of technology opportunities, they should explore these fields. The minimum starting salary for any of ours is 40 to 45. When you get into some of the information assurance or chemical engineering area, it can be 80 to 85. Starting salary with a bachelor's degree. So you need to say, you got the aptitude, go for it. If they're female or minority, they can write their own ticket. It's amazing. And we have such wonderful qualified young people coming in. We need more.
Do you have a percentage of graduates who are staying in Nebraska?
Oh, good question. One of our charges was to curb brain drain. Well, guess what? We've curbed it. We also are enjoying a great deal of brain gain. They're coming in from other places. Iowa State knows us well. Yes. And I say that not as we're getting them, but Iowa State's an excellent school, and they're very broad in what they offer. We are narrow. We have picked off areas because we can't be good in everything. But when they're turning down or transferring out of Rensselaer or out of MIT, are deciding on us instead of Rice, come on, guys, we're getting it done. And that's word of mouth, and it's peer pressure. If you pick on a couple of parents who get together and they know who's number one in the class, they know who's got all the offers, and if a student steps out and blows the paradigm and a new one is found, other parents say, well, if it's good enough for Tommy, why are we going to spend all this money to send you way somewhere else? What we do say to students, especially at the undergraduate level, a lot of the more renowned schools, not putting them down, this is almost an envy statement. They have such big endowments, such great reputations, but the undergraduate students don't get research opportunities, and they're taught by graduate students instead of professors. So a lot of times we'll say to a student, come here for your undergraduate degree. We'll get you in with companies for real experience. We'll put you on research projects. Then when you go to graduate school at MIT or Carnegie or Harvard or wherever, you'll go in head and shoulders above in experience and publications. And that's not baloney. That's real. It's working.
A little bit about the faculty. Are they pleased with the supercomputer for teaching purposes as well as research? I know it involves parallel computing, which you would have to explain, but particularly for teaching purposes, is the supercomputer used for teaching purposes?
We have the first classes rolling out this summer. One, we have a 12 concentration or 12-hour group of classes, which is a concentration in supercomputing planned for next year. There's a learning curve with faculty. You can read about these things in books, but having it physically there gives you another whole venue. I think it will be. That's the plan. That's the goal. The excitement is there to that end, and we've got experts, especially through the Department of Defense and through the services themselves and through the contractors and sitting right next door at the GISC, that have done this type of stuff for years and have experts. So I think in partnering, it gives us, again, a giant leg up on someone trying to do something over in isolation all by yourself. And the guys sitting back here from the GISC will tell you we're always bothering them for something. But I say that somewhat tongue-in-cheek. The opportunities that they provide these students, we could never buy, and we could never pay for it in any sense, let alone have them so close to us.
When a faculty opening occurs, how many applicants do you ordinarily get?
Well, we're doing two right now, and there's 37 applicants for one and 26 for the other. And the person that appears to get one of the offers is coming from Carnegie Mellon. Another one is coming from Lawrence Livermore. So we're getting really good quality people showing an interest. It's exciting. People are taking a chance, so to speak, because we're young. But let me tell you the advantage to that. When you're young and nimble, the bureaucracy is a little less to deal with. When you're older and established, you got another issue. The provost at Carnegie Mellon is a good friend of mine. His name is Dr. Mark Camlett. He was the dean of the Hines School of Business at Carnegie. He's been here several times. I've been there. He told me, I am so jealous. I said, right. He says, no, hear me out. I said, okay. We've got the CERT, the Computer Emergency Response Team, over here. First one in the country. We've got robotics over here. We've got artificial intelligence here. We've got engineering over here. And we've got computer science split between arts and sciences and the College of Business. Excuse me, he said, the damn walls would fall if they talked to each other. He said, you've got it where you've got interaction. He said, my goodness, you all can decide to do something, and you can do it quickly. I'll go back to my friends over here. The Strategic Command needed Information Operations Program, a cadre of classes taught by a university, because right now the Naval Postgraduate School is kind of the premier in that arena. And then to have Strategic Command sitting here that talks all over the world about what's happening, that has hands-on. And I will say they come to us periodically for contacts in some business areas that they need help with. It's a wonderful relationship. And all of that is good for the economy. You would not believe how many new companies are knocking on the door and looking at moving portions or total companies here. And did you know that Omaha is fourth in the nation as the ideal site to build data centers? Bet you didn't know that. And I bet when the list comes out next time, we'll be moving up a little bit, because I know who's digging holes where in some cases. We're sitting in a catbird seat.
We're out of time. Please join me in thanking Winnie. For a very informative presentation. And our thanks to our Omaha Press Club audience here at this temporary home in Joslyn Castle for their excellent questions. And also to our KIOS radio audience. Thank you again, Winnie. We are adjourned.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. Our guest speaker has been Winnie Callahan, Executive Director of the Peter Kiewit Institute and the College of Information Science and Technology on the University of Nebraska at Omaha campus, as well as Assistant Vice President of the University of Nebraska Foundation. Her topic was the UNO supercomputer. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, May 15, 2008, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club presents these noontime educational forums each month. The next program will be Thursday, June 19th, at the Joslyn Castle. The speaker will be State Senator Ernie Chambers. He'll reflect on his 38-year career in the Nebraska unicameral. If you'd like to attend this or other future programs in the series, call the Omaha Press Club at 345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. Complete Noon Forum listings are available on the Internet. Visit our website at kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.